Welcome to The Paleo View. I'm bestselling author and co-creator of realeverything.com, Stacy Toth. I focus on being healthy inside and out through real life, food, and talk.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times bestselling author and creator of thepaleomom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
Welcome back to The Paleo View. Hi, Sarah. Hi, listeners.
Hello. I don't know why I just said that in such a dorky way.
I know why you did, because we have just been chatting and there's some insane bloopers at the end of the podcast.
I'm assuming that Matt will just pick and choose a couple of his favorite and not actually put 5 minutes of bloopers at the end of the podcast.
It's going to be one of those interesting shows. I can always tell when we're chatting and there's like giggles and laughter and weirdness before we start. I'm like, okay, I know how this is going to go.
Which one of us is in the like punchy mood tonight? I don't even know which one of us it is. Is it me?
It's you. I don't know that I would call what I'm in punchy. I think what I'm in is delirious. Cause I literally just walked in the door from work 5 minutes before we started recording. So I'm a little like spinning.
You're like offloading. You're offloading the workday on the podcast.
Yep, for sure.
That's a whole different dynamic than normal. Or I guess it's like a seasonal dynamic, because every time you get to the end of the fiscal year, it's like that. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Well.
It's just going to get worse, friends.
I was going to ask, how are you in general?
I'm good. Thank you. I don't know that I really have anything to report. How about yourself?
I have just been nose to the grindstone. So I am really, really, really trying to wrap up the new book. There's still no tentative release date. There's nothing available for pre-orders, everyone, but I am working on another book. I think in the next few weeks, the draft will look something like a book. Right now it's fairly jumbled, but it's just starting to like all of a sudden come together. So it'll be either like late this year or early next year, sort of the timing. Cause it's not going to weigh 6.5 pounds. This one, it's going to be like 2 pounds or something amazingly light. And I'm excited about it. It's a microbiome book, and I have been stuffing my brain full of new information and fun facts so I can geek out about gut bacteria. But it's been a really steep learning curve for me to write, because it's a lot of just, you know, like bacterial taxonomy is not something that I ever learned before, and I've had to learn it in order to write about it. So it's really been fun, just because the research has really expanded my knowledge base and I've learned some like really cool things. But it's also been because of that amount of research that's had to go into the writing, it's also been like a serious project. And I actually started this book about 3 years ago, before The Healing Kitchen and before Paleo Principles. So seeing the light at the end of the tunnel is really nice. But yeah, it's basically just keep swimming. That's pretty much, but it's book writing. Just keep book writing. It doesn't have the same ring.
No.
No. So that's me.
Well, I'm excited about this week's topic. But before we jump in, we're doing something a little new. So we did this thing for a little while where we read reviewer comments and feedback, and we have a folder of things that we've pulled in, but all I see here from you are like 87 pages of scientific references. I don't see a customer review or comment. But what I do have that's new is for our listeners, we're going to try to start working with brands that you and I already like or use or work with or whatever.
All of the above, yes, actually. Yeah.
For our listeners to benefit from both learning about them as well as occasionally, if we can, getting them a discount. And so I'm excited that the first time we're kicking this off is with one of both of our favorite products. I don't know how many times we've mentioned Vital Proteins on the podcast, not because either one of us even got anything out of, if you go to vitalproteins.com and you buy something, like Sarah and I don't benefit at all. So what we've done is set up a vitalproteins.com/thepaleoview link. And when you go to that site, there's our favorite products and they're slightly discounted, right, Sarah?
They are. And we've got a couple bundles of some of our favorite pairings of products. So you can start there on your awesome Vital Protein shopping, which is handy because our topic this week is all about collagen. And I know that we're both, I've been using Vital Proteins, collagen, et cetera. I've got, I think, five Vital Proteins products in my house at all times. But I've been using their collagen like way back when they just had collagen peptides and gelatin, like way back when they only had two products.
Yeah, me
so
too.
Five years? Long time.
I remember I originally wrote like this big post all about it because the community had been using a different brand.
And I remember because you did the whole amino acid comparison.
I did. And I did a scientific write-up on why our family had switched to Vital Proteins. And I did a lot of research before making that decision because it was less cost effective for my audience. And I wanted them to understand why. So nowadays, I think it's well understood. And, you know, Vital Proteins does such a good job of education that we don't need to do as much about their brand to do that. But like you said, for me, I don't go a single day without taking liver pills and collagen. And I also love the veggie blend. So those are my three favorite products. But if I do not have collagen and liver pills, I feel it. I sincerely, sincerely, personally use those products and love them, which is why I'm excited for our listeners.
I go through one of the big tubs of collagen peptides by myself every month. It's 2 to 3 scoops a day. And I definitely notice, especially in my joints, if I don't consume it. And I also huge fan of the liver pills. Obviously, I'm kind of a fan of Dr. Sarah Ballantyne's collagen veggie blend, seeing how my name's on the bottle. The other ones that I really like is the cartilage collagen, the capsules,
which we've talked about here on this podcast. We specifically talked about why those capsules are better back on a back injury
way back
podcast. Matt can link it in the show notes. Yeah.
And I also use their gelatin in cooking. So, you know, if it's, I think of the peptides as more of a, I just love it in tea and coffee. It's actually, to me, it enhances the texture.
Yes. Now when I have tea or coffee without collagen, I'm like, what's wrong with this?
Right.
The texture's off.
It's not right. Like I keep packets of collagen peptides in my purse just in case I'm out with a friend and we get coffee or something like that, because even if I get like a really fancy almond milk latte at, you know, whatever coffee shop, it's still not right without collagen peptides. So I now keep one in my purse for, you know, just in case I'm drinking a hot beverage that is in need of some peptides to make it right.
I don't do a good enough job of using the gelatin. Like when we do, the kids and I love gummies in particular, whether we make them with kombucha or, you know, have you ever considered making collagen veggie blend, mixing it with some fruit and then adding gelatin to make gummies. I'm feeling like this needs to be a recipe.
So actually, and I can't remember which AIP blogger did that, but I have seen one of the AIP bloggers do it.
Then you're doubling down on collagen and gelatin.
Which would be amazing. And with the new formula of collagen veggie blend that has, it has a very carrot juice flavor now, it would be like super, super easy to mix it with other flavors. I've done like popsicles with it. Mm-hmm. And the flavor like just, it blends into other fruits now, you know, it just kind of hides much more easily. So yeah, I bet that'd be good.
Okay. Well, I just want to remind people, we've gone off on our tangent. We're going to talk about why we love collagen and the science of it in the show, but in particular, you and I both love and use Vital Proteins. So now, listeners, we have finally gotten to be able to hook you up. vitalproteins.com/thepaleoview. No spaces, no weirdness, just the paleo view. And it'll take you to our favorite products bundled together at a discount. Boom, drop the mic. Do we even need the rest of the show?
I mean, I guess we might as well since we're here.
Well, also Cindy, lovely Cindy has asked a question. Why don't you tell us what it is?
So Cindy asks, hi ladies, thank you for your amazing podcast and all the wonderful information that both of you share. You both have inspired and motivated me to focus on real foods and look at healing through lifestyle and nutrient density. Here's the question. With Sarah's new Vital Proteins product, Collagen Veggie Blend, I'm curious about reactions to collagen. I have noticed that I can have half to one whole scoop of Vital Proteins collagen in my coffee or smoothie or water and feel fine. However, if I go over one scoop, I get that bloated, gassy, sometimes everybody out moments. Everyone talks about all the benefits of adding collagen to their diet.
I just want to state for the record that I'm like standing here with a heart for Cindy, because she just quoted me in a way that I heart you, Cindy. That's all. I heart you so much that I interrupted Sarah to tell you that I love that you use my phrase.
I when I read that, I kind of expected you to also love it. So to continue Cindy's question, everyone talks about the benefits of adding collagen to their diet, but I can't seem to find a good explanation for those of us who seem to react to it. Can you discuss why some of us may be reacting to collagen? Is bone broth enough to get all the benefits of adding collagen? Thanks so much for all you do. So I thought with Cindy's question, I kind of wanted to take a step back, you know, especially because Stacey and I have already talked about how much we love Vital Proteins, collagen-based products, about just what collagen is and why it is, you know, so important and such an amazing sort of boon to even all of the amazing dietary choices that we're making. So collagen itself is a protein. It is the main structural protein in our bodies. It is found in the space between all of our cells. So it's sort of the glue that holds all of our cells together. It is the main protein in bone, in cartilage. It's important in tendons and ligaments, in any kind of connective tissue. So anything that connects something to something beside it. So it's also important in things like blood vessels, in the heart, in gut tissues, in our teeth. We have a lot of collagen even in our muscle. It's actually the most abundant protein in not just humans, but all mammals. It actually makes up about 25 to 35% of all of the protein in our bodies. So one of the reasons why supplementing with collagen is so helpful is because it provides us with the raw materials to make collagen in our bodies. And one of the reasons why that's important is because collagen is made up of amino acids that we can be deficient in if the main source of protein in our bodies is muscle meat. So collagen has a fairly unique balance of amino acids compared to muscle. So the reason why consuming collagen is good is it provides us with those raw materials. There's two different sort of products that are available out there that are sort of supplements with collagen, collagen peptides or gelatin. And they're both considered hydrolyzed versions of collagen protein. So they're both broken apart versions. Otherwise, you would just be like gnawing on a joint tissue. So, you know, another way to get collagen is to do things like eat, you know, chicken wings or pig's feet, where the joint tissue is softened enough to be able to chew. Gelatin and collagen peptides breaks it apart a little bit more so that it's easier for us to, you know, we don't have to chew it and it's easier to digest. So gelatin obviously has some different properties than collagen peptides. So it, you know, when you dissolve it into a hot liquid and then you let it set, it makes, you know, gelatinous jello, right? Or gummies, depending on the concentration with the liquid. When it is broken up, you know, these long collagen proteins, when they're broken up into even smaller pieces, that's collagen peptides. And collagen peptides dissolve, you know, pretty easily into hot or cold liquids. They don't have that chemistry of solidifying once they've been dissolved and then chilled. And, but the important thing here is that the amino acid profiles are the same. So gelatin and collagen peptides are both just slightly broken up versions of collagen. So they just react differently in food chemistry. But other than that, they're providing us with the same protein. Now, collagen is considered a complete protein, almost. There's one amino acid that it doesn't quite have enough of to be an awesome protein for our bodies, but it is particularly rich in amino acids that we often do not consume enough of to meet our body's demands from our diet, glycine being the most important one of these. So 20% of the protein in collagen is glycine by weight, and glycine is phenomenally important. It has a number of beneficial roles in the body on top of being something that we tend to not get enough of from other foods, but that is a important and the most abundant amino acid in collagen. It also can help improve sleep quality, enhance memory. It regulates the production of bile acids, and it is very, very important in the synthesis of some extremely important proteins. It can help reverse age-related damage to skin cells. It can also help to drive collagen production, and it has a variety of also anti-inflammatory effects. So glycine is incredibly important. It acts as an antioxidant. It actually may be critical for immune regulation. So supplementing with glycine for anybody with chronic illness or autoimmune disease can actually help the immune system function better.
What?
Right?
Because, shocker.
Because it's so important in immune health. And there's a whole pile of studies that look at glycine supplementation showing that it can, for example, decrease just supplementing with glycine. So that's basically taking a collagen peptide supplement, which is mostly glycine, decreases metabolic disorders in people with cardiovascular disease. It is known to reduce various inflammatory diseases, including diseases that happen in critical care wards like sepsis. It supplementing with glycine can prevent organ transplant failure. Like, how like mind-blowing is that? It's preventative for arthritis and can actually improve arthritis symptoms. It reduces stomach ulcers. It has been shown in various models of gut injury in scientific literature to be protective against gut injury. It improves liver health. It's been known to inhibit tumor growth in some animal models of cancer. It potentially can restore insulin sensitivity and improve diabetes. It has been shown to increase weight loss in obese people, and it has been shown to improve vascular health. So those are all of the effects that have been shown in scientific studies that supplementation with glycine has. Just phenomenally amazing. So glycine is the dominant reason why we want to be consuming collagen, but there's some other really cool amino acids in collagen as well. So there's also glutamic acid, which is a very, very important amino acid neurotransmitter. And it's actually a really key compound in just cellular metabolism. So glutamic acid is really important. Collagen is also high in proline and
You didn't mention the most like exciting thing about this. I'm reading the scientific notes here. I'm doing all of our listeners a solid and making sure you don't skip anything interesting.
Glutamic acid is also an amino acid found in a bunch of different foods that gives umami flavor to foods. So it's also why mushrooms, olives, tomatoes, fish sauce, why those provide an umami flavor. And it may be why you and I think that coffee and tea doesn't taste right without our collagen peptides.
Like the word that I use, and I am not, I feel like this word is too sophisticated for me, but I like it anyway. I tell people all the time that collagen adds an unctuous feel to the liquid. And now wow. I feel substantiated in this hoity-toity word that I've been using.
I mean, that's a $5 word right there.
$5 word. I don't even know what that means. Okay, back to the science.
So collagen is also really high in proline and hydroxyproline. Hydroxyproline is an amino acid that's not one of the 20 that we use to build our proteins. So it's basically a variation of proline that is hydroxylated with vitamin C. So basically, it's an amino acid in collagen that our body basically can use in modifications of collagen after collagen is being built. So these are also, very interestingly, proline is the amino acid that makes grains really, really hard. The protein in grains really, really hard to digest. But it's something that we still need. So our best sources are actually animal sources, and collagen is a really, really fantastic source. 11% of the protein in collagen is proline and hydroxyproline each. So that's about 22% of the protein in collagen coming from proline or this variation of proline. And it's absolutely essential for maintaining healthy skin, joints, tendons, and cardiac health. Alanine is about 8% of collagen, and it is really, really important for immune health and also for muscle, lean muscle mass, exercise capacity. So it's really, really important for muscular health. Arginine is also about 8% of collagen. It's essential for immune function. It helps promote wound healing, cell division. It also has some in the endocrine system, so it's important for hormone release. Very, very important amino acid. Aspartic acid is about 6% by weight of collagen, and it is involved in the Krebs cycle in cells. So that's how we make ATP, or the energy currency of all cells. And so it's very, very important also in the urea cycle for producing, it's important for producing glucose, so gluconeogenesis. And it's also an important neurotransmitter. So aspartic acid is also another super, super important amino acid. So all of these amino acids are very, very rich in collagen. All of the other amino acids make up about 24% of collagen. So we've got this handful, glycine, proline being the most dominant, but then also glutamic acid, alanine, arginine, and aspartic acid. And they all are amino acids that we can be deficient in if we overly focus on, you know, chicken breast and steak as our protein sources. So they're phenomenally important, and collagen provides all of them. So it becomes really about supporting our health through nutrient density is really what collagen peptides boil down to, because our diets tend to be deficient with our modern food supply. Now, part of the question was, can bone broth be a good substitute? Bone broth is just not as concentrated. So if you think about, throwing a scoop of gelatin into a cup of water and how solid that gets when you refrigerate it compared to how solid your bone broth gets when you refrigerate it, that's a really good sort of, comparison of the amount of collagen that's in broth. So when broth is really, really rich in collagen, you've used chicken feet or pig's feet to make it. So you've got a lot of that joint tissue, a lot of collagen to dissolve into the broth. The broth will be very gelatinous when it's cooled. Most of us will use a lot of other bones. That helps with flavor and the mineral profile of the broth. It doesn't necessarily add to the collagen content of the broth. So broth is an amazing superfood. It is absolutely the collagen content combined with the mineral content in broth that makes it such a great food. Collagen peptides is much more concentrated, so it's a lot easier to get substantial amounts of protein in a much more sort of convenient package and certainly a smaller dose.
So I know we've talked about all the things that it does have. One of the things that I like to point out to people is that it is not a complete protein. Mm-hmm. Do you maybe want to talk about that a little bit?
So the term complete protein, let's take a step back. There's 20 amino acids that our bodies use to make all of the proteins in our body. And we have to get those amino acids from foods. There's some that we can create, so we can convert one amino acid into another. Usually those processes are inefficient, so it is always better for our health to get all 20 amino acids from food. But there are 9 amino acids that we cannot, there's no conversion, there's no process that we can create. And those 9 amino acids are considered the essential amino acids. So collagen has 8 out of those 9. It has very, very little tryptophan. So tryptophan is the essential amino acid that it's missing. And it's also not super high in isoleucine, threonine, or methionine. So it isn't considered a complete protein because it's missing, it doesn't have enough tryptophan. Tryptophan doesn't meet the levels of the other amino acids. I always think the term complete protein is kind of misleading because it really is only looking at having substantial amounts of those 9 amino acids when really we need all 20. To me, the word complete, wouldn't that mean all 20? It doesn't. It really is a protein that is very, very heavily skewed towards these amino acids that I've just talked about, it doesn't have substantial amounts of the other amino acids. So in terms of, if it's the only protein at a meal, that meal would have the strong likelihood of being deficient in at least one amino acid. So it's much better to think of collagen peptides as a supplement, right? Just you would think of broth as the base for a soup, and you would have some kind of other protein in that soup. Even if it's like super old school and it's just, right, you're boiling the chicken carcass and then you're taking the meat off of that carcass to be the meat in the soup, that's still adding the other amino acids. So it's definitely... not a standalone protein, but that doesn't take away from the health benefits. So collagen peptides, not only are they particularly rich in these amino acids that are super, super important for our health that we can be deficient in relatively easily, even when we're making really, really good food choices, but studies show that those amino acids are highly bioavailable. So about 90% of the amino acids in collagen peptides are digested and absorbed within 6 hours. Compared that to meat, which might take closer to 12 hours. So it is extremely useful protein. And studies actually show that the amino acids in collagen peptide supplements are actually incorporated into our tissues very, very quickly. So they actually are getting into our cartilage. They're actually getting into our skin. They're actually increasing the collagen formation and actually protecting our joint tissues. They're actually, it even increases bone density, although not all of the studies looking at collagen supplementation and bone density show benefits. Some show that it doesn't have any effect. But it really is like super usable by the body.
Yeah. So I think what's interesting to me is I've kind of used that term pre-digested and said things become more bioavailable is the scientific term, fine, more easily digestible and usable by your body if it's already been broken down by either a cooking process or something else. So I think that's kind of, you know, my layman's approach as to why collagen peptides and gelatin are so helpful, especially for someone like myself that has joint pain or autoimmune issues or whatever it might be, why it's so incredibly powerful. And I love that you found scientific studies to show that that's the case, because I never for a minute questioned it, but I always do like science to back things up. But the reason that I brought up the not a complete, I called it not a complete protein, but what I meant was you can't get the essential proteins that you need by only consuming collagen. And the reason that I mentioned that is because as someone who was a vegetarian for a long time, I do get a lot of questions from people who are either coming in or out of vegetarianism, veganism, and the idea of a powder is more palatable for people than, you know, choosing to eat, for example, a chicken breast. I get that. And certainly it's a wonderful starting point. It's especially going to be great for helping your body learn to digest protein, because it isn't this type of protein isn't something that your body has been processing for a long time. So I highly suggest adding it. It's a great starting point for transition. So if you know someone who is a vegetarian and who is looking for, you know, more energy and all that kind of stuff, for example, the liver pills with the B12 is a phenomenal item for someone coming out of vegetarianism. However, I do try to ensure that people know that they can't sustain themselves long-term off of collagen alone. So, and the soup example that you gave is such a good one, because it's really how our ancestors would have gotten these items before. Mm. And we're just not making traditional foods like that. You know, is it necessary to have this as a supplement? No, but we're not consuming the high quality organ meat and we're not doing the slow cooking process as much. I mean, even myself as someone who loves soup, we just, especially in the summertime, like we're not consuming it as much.
I am definitely a soup in winter person. Like I start to gravitate towards more, just like salads, right? Like more cold dishes in the summer. Like maybe it's it's a cooked hot meat, but it's like my sides all become cold, you know, different salads in the summer. And something about that hot, it just makes me too hot. That's what it is. It makes me sweat. That's the problem with soup in the summer.
It just also kind of feels, not kind of feels, it makes your house warmer to cook it. And, you know, you're already trying to blast the AC and all that kind of stuff. So we do, of course, make, you know, stuff and then we freeze it. So we have broth that we can get into during the year. But in the wintertime, we kind of have broth going like all the time. And then we get to the summer and I put an item on the meal plan list this week and Matt was like, oh, I gotta make broth for that. So with that said, I personally find it incredibly helpful, but there are people who have issues with collagen and gelatin. And this has been an interesting topic for me because it's a question I get pretty frequently, having supported my love of collagen and gelatin. I mean, people brought it to us on book tour, right? They like brought me broth on book tour, knowing how much I loved it. And when people ask me, you know, it doesn't sit well with me, or, you know, I have this issue, I'm just kind of guessing and, you know, grabbing at things in the dark. And so I am looking forward to your explanation of why, given how wonderful this is for so many different reasons, what would cause a reaction and is there anything people can do about it?
Yeah. So there's actually three different ways that our bodies can react to collagen, whether that's the gelatin or collagen peptides. And they look a little bit different and the timing is a little bit different. So I want to kind of go through all three. Let's start with allergy, because an allergy to beef, right? Collagen peptides are typically beef derived. An allergy to beef means that a small section of at least one protein in beef is triggering an immune response where the immune B cells are producing antibodies that bind to that one little section of that one protein. So antibodies bind to a segment of a protein that's between 15 and 20 amino acids long. So even in collagen peptides that are broken apart into very small little chains of amino acids, there's long enough chains in there to bind with an antibody. So allergies to beef can still be experienced with beef-derived collagen peptides because of that fact. Now, some people with beef allergies don't have any response to collagen peptides, and that has to do with the details of exactly what antibodies their body is making. So if they're making antibodies that recognize a section of beef that's not a protein that's repeated, you know, not in collagen, then they'll be fine with the collagen peptides. But a lot of people will find that those antibodies will still recognize collagen peptides. So symptoms of allergy, they tend to be very fast, within a couple of minutes to about 2 hours after consuming the product. So if the reaction is happening later than that, it is almost certainly a different type of reaction. It typically involves a hives or skin rash. It can involve the whole range of GI symptoms: nausea, stomach cramps, indigestion, vomiting, diarrhea, or everybody out moments. All of the things that we sort of associate with seasonal allergies, like a stuffy, runny nose, sneezing, headaches, it can trigger asthma-like symptoms. And of course, the exaggerated life-threatening version of this is anaphylaxis. So if the symptoms look like, right, that's a histamine-driven reaction, because that's what IgE antibodies do, is they stimulate histamine release from mast cells and basal cells. So that is one possible reaction, is it's actually a beef allergy. And in somebody who is experiencing that reaction to collagen peptides, you would expect that reaction to also occur with beef broth or with beef product consumption. Food intolerance.
Hey, Sarah.
Yeah.
Did you run across like what percentage of people that happens to, or from a histamine perspective? And I don't want to get into a histamine show, but is it the type of histamine response that someone could do a histamine focused diet, like the FODMAP diet, to help themselves heal and not have that reaction?
No, this would be a true allergy. Allergies have a very, very long memory in the body. And very, very small amounts of exposure can perpetuate that memory. So allergies are not likely to go away with food avoidance. They can, you know, there are mechanisms by which it can eventually go away, but they're much, much less likely. So this isn't like a histamine reaction in the sense of like histamine intolerance. It's a histamine reaction in the sense of, that's why you take antihistamines when you're having an allergic reaction. So because it's driven by IgE antibody production, unfortunately, the immune system memory for that is very, very long, and it is unlikely to go away. So really the only solution is avoidance. Now, that does impact a very, very small percentage of people, allergies to beef. So if you think about like top 8 allergens, those are foods that might impact between, say, a 10th of a percent of the population up to about 2% of the population. Allergies to other foods are much, much smaller percentages of the population. So it's not likely to be common, and you would know because it would show up on an allergy test. So you can go to an allergist and do a skin test or a blood test for antibodies to beef, and those IgE antibodies would show up, or you would have a skin reaction after doing a skin test for allergies. So that, if that's the reaction that's going on, the only solution is avoidance. So it's not actually driven by the same mechanisms that drive histamine intolerance. Food intolerance, which is a different kind of antibody, the memory for that is much shorter. So an IgG or IgA reaction, as opposed to IgE, which is it's just different types of antibodies, but it's different cells that produce those different types of antibodies, and the memory is much, much shorter for food intolerance. So if it's a food intolerance, that's where avoidance, typically for at least 6 months and up to a couple of years, can make that intolerance disappear. Food intolerance reactions are a slower build, so they typically occur between 4 hours and 4 days after consuming the food. It's one of the reasons why, you know, identifying them can be so tricky, because even with a food journal, if you're trying to figure out what you ate 4 days before that's triggering today's reaction, can be really, really tricky. But it can involve all of those GI symptoms: stomach pain, stomach cramps, bloating, gas, diarrhea. It can also have sort of full body symptoms, especially fatigue, headaches, mood issues, and basically any kind of skin issue, but rashes are sort of the most common. So that is also antibody driven. It's also an immune reaction. It does not involve the release of histamine the same way an IgE reaction does. But it does involve sort of symptoms of an inflammatory response. And eliminating the food, working on gut health, working on immune regulation, can often make those food intolerances eventually either diminish or go away completely. The last possibility for reacting to collagen, though, I actually think is the most interesting and probably the most common. And that is the fact that our gut bacteria love to eat amino acids, which, fun fact I learned writing my new book. So it turns out gut bacteria eat more than just fiber. So they'll actually eat just about anything that's there. They'll eat fats, they'll eat proteins, they'll eat non-fiber carbohydrates. They'll actually even, you know, some bacteria will ferment, say, fiber into, you know, various metabolites like short chain fatty acids. And then there's other bacteria that will eat those metabolites. So it's one of the reasons why we have keystone species of bacteria. Other bacteria eat what they make from what we eat. So it's a really, really dynamic ecosystem. But we have a whole pile of really, really important, you know, normal probiotic residents of the gut that love to eat glycine. This includes lactobacillus, which is, you know, found in fermented foods, found in fermented dairy, especially. It's one of the first residents of our gut microbiomes after we're born. Bacillus, which are soil-based organisms, which are they're considered foundational species. So they're so important in our gut bacteria and our gut microbiomes that they actually create an environment that supports the growth of other really important species. Clostridium, which is a really, really important family of probiotics. Also Streptococcus, that sounds like strep throat. It's a related bacteria, but we do have some probiotic species, and proteobacteria. All of those can metabolize glycine. And when they do, they produce a variety of really, really beneficial metabolites that our bodies can use. So they can produce short-chain fatty acids, which improve the health of all of our cells lining the gut. They can produce what are called branched-chain fatty acids. Again, these are super important, beneficial metabolites that can make our guts healthier. So it reverses leaky gut. It improves the health of our immune system. There's a whole pile of studies showing that, for example, a lot of butyrate, which is a short chain fatty acid, is really important for reversing diabetes and losing weight and reducing cardiovascular disease risk. And so these are really, really important metabolites. And actually, this consumption of glycine by our gut bacteria may actually be required for the synthesis of glutathione, which is our body's dominant antioxidant enzyme. So you actually may require your gut bacteria to first metabolize glycine in order for that glycine to be incorporated into glutathione, which is just an amazing, like, yet another reason why we are so dependent on our gut bacteria for health. So we actually have a whole pile of different types of gut bacteria, normal, healthy gut bacteria, that eat glycine and actually eat other amino acids. So the same, you know, the same bacteria also like to eat glutamic acid. They also like to eat aspartic acid. So they're also eating some of the other amino acids that are components of collagen. So if there's an imbalance of bacteria, and if there are too many, even of these probiotic strains, higher up the small intestine than ideal, because normally these would be residents of the large intestine, but at dominant anyways. We certainly have some in the small intestine, but typically a much lower concentration. So if there's some kind of gut dysbiosis, which means wrong kinds of bacteria or the wrong locations or the wrong numbers, as they convert glycine into other products, one of the things that the byproducts, right, short chain fatty acids pretty dramatically increases the acidity of the small and large intestine, wherever that fermentation is happening. Gases are produced. And just like a large amount of any kind of fermentable fiber will cause gas because of that fermentation, right? Gas production. It will cause, it will sometimes cause loose stools because of the production of some of these compounds. If there's some kind of gut dysbiosis, that can be magnified. So if somebody is having especially GI symptoms, it just could be a sign that there's some imbalance in gut bacteria. And in that case, you don't leave it out completely. You just do exactly what Cindy has already discovered of keep the dose below symptoms. The symptoms would be typically GI, so abdominal pain, bloating, indigestion, diarrhea, excess gas, flatulence. And depending on where that gut dysbiosis is occurring, so the farther down the GI tract it is, typically the longer it is after consuming something before you have symptoms. So if it's fairly high up, you could have symptoms within an hour. If it's fairly low down, you're looking at symptoms at about 24 hours. But what that really does is it indicates the need to address diet and lifestyle factors that are important for gut microbiome health. So eating a lot of vegetables, a variety of starchy and non-starchy vegetables, consuming a lot of seafood because omega-3 fats are really important, addressing vitamin D deficiency because it turns out that vitamin D deficiency will skew the microbiome towards less favorable strains. Living an active lifestyle is really important. Getting enough sleep is really important, and managing stress. So, like, those are really the fundamental keys to a healthy gut microbiome. And then you can, you know, once those things are addressed, you should be able to gradually up the intake and not trigger symptoms.
It's interesting. You know, SIBO was a hot topic within the community. I feel like maybe, was that 2 or 3 years ago? And there was an outpouring of sweet recipes that included sugar substitutes. And I love the way you described it, because that is more nutrient dense and healing approach. But the other thing that I didn't hear you mention is that the more sugars you're consuming, and it's fructose as well, correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. is going to feed those bacteria that are causing the dysbiosis. So at least until it's under control for whatever that looks like for you, and definitely working with a medical practitioner is the best way to go there for true testing. Will yeah, and help actually, it as well.
All sugar substitutes are generally known to skew the microbiome in unfavorable ways. There's actually a new paper looking at stevia that shows that it can do some unfavorable things to the gut bacteria. But all of the sugar alcohols, all of the, you know, chemical sweeteners, which obviously I'm sort of assuming our listeners aren't going to be consuming aspartame here, but all of those things can skew. What's really fascinating is honey can actually have a corrective influence on gut bacteria. So this is like a new thing that I've just learned in the last couple of weeks. And so there's a few, you know, obviously high vegetable consumption is top, but honey is one of those things that if you are going to consume something sweet, obviously you want to be mindful of things like blood sugar regulation. But that is probably the best sugar choice from a gut bacteria perspective.
Makes sense. I know the ones that you and I try to use the most in our recipes are the natural sources that you could find yourself, honey, maple syrup, and then the other option is molasses, which has its own set of wonderfulness. But it's not to say add sweeteners to things. I was actually saying the opposite, which is that sweeteners will feed the bad bacteria. So just be aware and be careful.
And swap where possible for honey while also, like, don't go crazy on the honey. It's still not like, don't eat a jar of honey with a spoon. It's not.
Don't be a Winnie the Pooh.
Right, exactly. That is not going to be helpful from a gut bacteria perspective.
Awesome. Well, I hope that we have slayed this question. I love that we've addressed both all wonderful things about it as well as how it can be problematic. So kind of a one place for all this information. If you have someone who is in your life and doesn't understand why you're putting packets of Vital Proteins in your coffee when you have breakfast with them, refer them to this podcast. If you know someone in your life who could benefit from adding collagen, this could be a great place to do it. As always, if you enjoyed the show, your reviews are incredibly helpful in sharing this with us, in sharing this with other people. And the other thing is, while we always love for you to shop the links on the sidebars of our blogs, don't forget that we have gotten you a custom link if you are interested in any of the Vital Proteins products that we've talked about this evening at vitalproteins.com/thepaleoview. Let us know what you think. This is kind of a new venture for us. Sarah and I have been doing this podcast for so long.
Almost 6 years.
Neither one of us had gray hair when we started.
And so much gray hair.
And, you know, we've tried really hard to make it a podcast that adds value to your life with content and entertainment. And it's just kind of come to a point where we're like, hey, we could help our listeners and monetize the podcast a little bit. So we aim to stay within the goals of the show that we have always had, which is to have fun with you all and share information. But we know that as the wonderful listeners that you are, you will understand that it takes money to host the podcast and have team members produce the podcast and create graphics and all that kind of stuff. And so we're hoping that this will help with some of those costs.
And we super appreciate everything that you do to support us, whether it's shopping through links in the podcast that we can now share with you as we work more with brands to bring you great offers like this, or if it's shopping off of links from our websites or subscribing to our newsletters or buying our books. All of the ways that you support us, we see it and we super appreciate it. So thank you. And we'll be back next week.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
So I introduced my kids to Wallet and Gromit this week.
Yeah.
And she's made me think of it. And it was pretty amazing.
I mean, I'm feeling like it's pretty nerdy to say that Wallace and Gromit are amazing, but I'm just going to let you have that.
I think it was just a really special moment to see them laughing so hysterically. And like, I introduced them to like the original television episodes and they were like bent over double laughing so hard. And I was like, this is great. This makes me happy in my heart. It's awesome.